Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Chelsea Knutson, and I, along with my co-counsel, Jill Barreto, represent the petitioner and the appellant in this matter, DEN. The principal point that we are asking this court to address is that the district court used the incorrect statutory framework when analyzing DEN's petition for an expungement following a jury acquittal. This is more than just a typographical or a clerical error. The district court repeatedly misinterpreted and mischaracterized the burden of proof and the nature of the remedy sought. The net result of that is that DEN failed to get a proper and fair hearing on the merits of his petition. If the district court had applied the proper statutory framework, it would have reached the only conclusion that is supported by the evidence presented in this case, that the City of Minnetonka, the only records holder to object to an expungement in this case, failed to meet their burden by clear and convincing evidence, and the statutory presumption in favor of expungement of DEN should have prevailed.
Ms. Knutson, I have a doozy of a question for you right off the bat.
Right.
What is evidence? The question every lawyer wants to get. For the purpose of this proceeding, is it the stuff that's filed in the district court, the letter objecting, the victim's or alleged victim's statement, or is it material that is actually introduced at the hearing?
It is the material that is actually introduced at the hearing. So respondents' brief makes reference to Minnesota Rules of General Practice 14, indicating that things should be considered by the court just because they were filed into the district court record. It is our position that just because something is in the court record does not make it evidence. There are many things in many district court records, including DENs, that no one would consider evidence, including subpoenas or other administrative documents. In this particular case, I think a useful analogy is one of sentencing, because sentencing proceedings, much like expungement hearings, are excluded from the rules of evidence, but that means that the state still has burden and still must present evidence, even if the formal rules of evidence do not apply. So, for example, the petition, it's our position, is not evidence if it was not offered by the City of Minnetonka, and that is supported by the unpublished case of WGM. So in sentencing, other types of sentencing proceedings, criminal records are certainly at issue, but it is the burden of the state to prove someone's criminal record, and that can't be done merely by a criminal record summary, which is inside a court record but is not offered as evidence, or in a criminal complaint, which may list out qualifying convictions for enhancement purposes. Just because it's in the district court record does not make it evidence.
What about the evidence that was presented at the trial in this case? I know you expressed some question in your brief about what the record before this court actually is, and the record before this court does include trial exhibits. Are those things that we can consider as part of this issue, the expungement?
No, Your Honor, and that's based on both case law and practical application. In terms of case law, we did cite to the RMW case, Court of Appeals unpublished, which specifically outlined that evidence at expungement hearing is not the same evidence that is presented at a trial. So it must be separate, articulable, offered evidence at the expungement hearing. As a practical matter, the expungement judge in this particular case was not the judge who handled it at trial court. So there's no indication that the expungement judge in this case reviewed any of the trial exhibits, the photographs, the CAD reports that were offered in this case at trial. And there's no indication in either the first or second district court order that this district court judge looked at or relied upon any of those exhibits in making their determination.
So it's your position that in order to have evidence as part of the expungement proceeding, any party objecting to expungement has a duty to actually produce some evidence in connection with any hearing that's held, introducing police reports, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's so even though the rules of evidence don't apply?
So the rules of evidence don't apply, but that doesn't mean that we do away with all common law ideals of fundamental reliability and usefulness. If it's not offered, there was no proponent of any information that was suggested to the judge, so there's no opportunity to ask cross-examination questions, to make argument with respect to the applicability of that evidence. Just because something is not subject to the rules of evidence doesn't mean that there's no requirement for evidence. And certainly when the city of Minnetonka, as well as any other record holders, failed to appear at the hearing, that they waived their ability to offer any evidence.
But doesn't that really apply in the face of common sense in the other way? So, for example, we've got at least two documents that I think are fairly significant, the petition itself and the victim impact statement. And one of the factors of the 12, one of the 12 factors that the district court is required to look at is the impact on the victim, and a victim impact statement. So if that's one of the things that the district court is supposed to look at, wouldn't it make sense that even if the formal rules of evidence, introducing it into evidence, are not followed, especially since the rules of evidence don't apply, shouldn't the district court have the discretion to consider, at a minimum, the victim impact statement?
Certainly the statute says that the district court should consider victim impact. I would note as a side note, again, in the RMW case, it's important to note that this case was an acquittal. And so we don't necessarily concede that FAC, the half-page letter, that she is a victim for purposes of that statute. But even assuming arguendo that she is, the district court should consider any evidence from a victim that is properly offered, for which there is a proponent, at the actual expungement hearing. And so simply making filings, you know, I would also note that the FAC letter was not filed in conjunction with the City of Minnetonka letter. They were not filed on the same day. It's not immediately apparent that they were filed by the same individual, although it seems likely because because it's referenced in the City of Minnetonka's letter. But the actual record notes that the proponent of that evidence is FAC herself. And so I would say that if it was properly offered and if there was a proponent of that evidence at the expungement hearing, it absolutely should have been considered by the district court. And in this case, ultimately was considered by the district court, although it's our position that even if the district court was correct in relying upon the FAC letter and considering it, that that does not meet the clear and convincing evidence burden that the state needed in order to overcome the presumption of expungement.
So is your position essentially that there is nothing, there's no evidence here?
That's correct.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's assume, for the sake of argument going forward, that the letter and the petition, though, are in evidence and were properly considered for the district court. What about in the petition, he had to and he was required to list all of his past convictions. Why isn't the past convictions, the victim impact statement, and it looks like the district court implicitly considered at least 7 out of the 12 factors. Why isn't that enough for what the state presented to meet that clear and convincing evidence standard? I mean, it's kind of a balancing. There's no, unfortunately, no clear-cut guidance to say, you know, you need 6 or you need 5 or 2 or even 1. But looking at the victim impact statement, for example, that's a pretty powerful statement. And the record, among the other factors, why isn't that enough to meet the clear and convincing evidence standard?
Your Honor is correct that there's no magic number of factors one must meet, but it's important that the court consider that all the factors must be considered in a light that there's a presumption in favor of expungement. A rebuttable one, certainly, but a presumption in favor of expungement. And both the district court's first and second orders both explicitly and implicitly rejected that and placed the burden on DEN, which was improper. But turning specifically to the two pieces of potential evidence that Your Honor referenced, I'd start with the petition. It does list, as required by statute, all of DEN's prior criminal charges and convictions. We do not agree that those criminal convictions, even taken in their entirety, would warrant a clear and convincing evidence. I would note that the last prior domestic assault-related even charge was in 2014. The last prior conviction was in 2006. So at this point, we are talking 15 years predating the instant offense that was sought for expungement. I would also note that even if this court found that those, and many of them, frankly, predate 2000 even, they're quite dated, but even assuming that you took those as a whole and said DEN has a extensive prior criminal history related to domestic assault, that does not mean that this particular offense for which he was acquitted should not be expunged. And to the extent that the nature of his criminal history means that the public should know that he's a purported public safety threat, that can certainly be done with looking at any of his other criminal convictions or criminal charges. DEN only sought expungement of the offense for which he was acquitted. So there's no reason why that particular offense and expungement of that particular offense would deny the public of any right to know of any potential public safety threat that he poses based on his old prior criminal history. Turning to the FAC letter, assuming that that is in fact proper evidence, I would note that it talks a lot about the nature of domestic violence generally and about DEN generally. There are no specific allegations as to what actually occurred, or at least what FAC believes occurred, because again, DEN was acquitted. I think that's really significant that there was a jury who heard the evidence and determined that he was not guilty of whatever allegations FAC may have made. Her main objection is that the police report and statements of officers should be available to the public. So that statement doesn't say how the public is harmed by expungement of this particular offense. It just says, I believe the direct quote is that it sends the wrong message. Well, that's not a reason not to expunge something, certainly not with related to the factors and in light of the presumption of expungement. I would also note that the FAC letter, while certainly talking about her feelings about DEN and what she believes occurred on that date, doesn't make any specific harms that public safety or potential victims or FAC would be harmed if expungement of this particular offense would occur. So for example, she doesn't say that there have been subsequent investigations, that they've relied upon these reports, there have been any OFP applications where they've relied upon these reports, or the fact that there's been prior criminal charges, that there has been no actual reliance upon those by the public or by FAC herself that would be harmed if those records were expunged.
In considering the FAC evidence, you know, if in fact it was evidence in the case, was the district court also required to take into account that there was an acquittal? In other words, I mean, was this really even appropriately considered as a victim impact statement given the fact that there was no conviction?
No. Our position is that FAC is not a victim for purposes of the expungement because there was a determination by the jury that those allegations did not occur. That is supported by the unpublished case 2016 RMW, that there was no victim and appellant engaged in no criminal behavior. The fact that DEN was acquitted is significant, and acquittal must mean something. Right? Acquittal, by many standards, you know, the courts have held in Wakefield and O'Meara that acquitted evidence for which someone was acquitted may not be used in 63420 or Spriggle determinations, and that the fundamental ideas of fairness mean that when someone has been acquitted, that there should be a benefit to that finding. And so you're correct. It's our position that FAC is not a victim and that the district court should not have considered her as a victim for those purposes. But to the extent that they did, the district court, a presumption underlying the district court's order, first and second, as well as the respondent's briefing, is that there was a domestic assault, that DEN committed a domestic assault, and as a result, he's a public safety threat. And even in the district court's second order, which again, the second time also misapplied the standard, said that DEN had not shown evidence of rehabilitation.
So with regard to the misapplication of the standard, you know, facts aside, it looks like in the district court's order, it cited to the wrong provision a couple times, but it also did cite to the correct standard, the correct presumption anyway, which was the flaw in the first order. How did the district court's misciting of the statutory provision impact the error here alleging?
The second order also misstated the second order said that there was a dismissal, which is an error, and that the correct standard was one for acquittal. But then in the very next paragraph went on to repeat the incorrect standard because it goes on to say that that there's an extraordinary remedy in expungement only upon a clear and convincing showing, essentially repeating the subdivision 5A factors. And so even the court's analysis in the second order is colored by a presumption against DEN and that the nature sought is an extraordinary remedy rather than a presumption that would favor DEN. So the remedy is not corrected and continues to be misapplied in the second order as well. for those reasons, we are asking that this court reverse the district court's order and remand for an order directing expungement be granted. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please, when you begin, state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Anna Crabb, C-R-A-B-B. I'm here on behalf of the City of Minnetonka, including the Minnetonka City Attorney's Office and the Minnetonka Police Department. Both were the primary agencies involved in this case. It's my honor and privilege to be here this morning to present this argument to you, especially in person. I would argue to you, Your Honor, that despite the fact that the court clearly erred in some of the language in both orders, that the overall denial of expungement was clearly appropriate here. We would therefore be asking you to affirm with a correction of the proper subdivision with respect to the balancing of the relevant factors, or remand possibly to make more findings or get more information as an alternative.
Why would we remand to make to get more information?
If the court, for example, decided that the court didn't make sufficient findings on each of the 12 factors, we would argue that some of the factors, it really didn't have the evidence. There's 12 different factors, and the state isn't in a position to offer information about the current situation for DEN, so the court is only able to make findings on the factors that it has the information about. Obviously,
suggesting, Ms. Crabb, that we remand with instructions to the district court to reopen the record?
Well, I believe that's an alternative. First, Your Honor, respectfully, we're suggesting you should affirm the denial. As an alternative, if you find that the district court made some mistake with regard to the findings or conclusion, you are also able to remand. One thing, for example, that wasn't in evidence per se was the DEN is required to include copies of any petitions for orders for protection and no contact orders. That was not done here. If the court has some question about what was in or wasn't in evidence, it could certainly remand for the court to consider that as well. With regard to this case, the state has a different opinion than counsel, and I believe our opinion is actually consistent with the counsel who argued this at the district court level. On page 2 of the transcript, counsel for DEN did indicate that she would usually rest on the affidavit that they filed, so that includes the petition. So I believe even counsel's own attorney who initially handled this case agreed the petition was relevant.
But wouldn't that be after it's introduced into evidence, though?
Well, I would submit that it is in evidence. I believe that, I know Judge Gaetas was on the committee that changed the rules about the rules of evidence for expungement proceedings so that these would be more informally done. I believe that committee indicated that these hearings should be conducted on the basis of written materials, including letters, affidavits, and other hearsay. Filing something ahead of time, there's no reason that that shouldn't be able to be considered for the hearing. The state filed a letter and the witness statement.
So let me just interrupt as we're talking about the question of what constitutes evidence for the purpose of these hearings. Is it your position that the letter that the city filed into the district court in response to the petition constitutes evidence in the case?
Yes, I believe that all the submissions of the parties can be considered evidence. It's not a witness statement per se because the state wouldn't be testifying, but I believe the arguments and other information in the letter can be considered. I believe also under State versus HJL, I believe this court just decided that case in an order opinion on March 4th, 2022, A21-11-22. That order and opinion also indicates what the record is on an appeal for expungements. And under Minnesota Rules of Civil Appellate Procedure 110.01, that includes the documents filed in the trial court, the exhibits, and the transcript of the proceedings.
But why would a letter from counsel be considered evidence? I mean, letters or briefs are not evidence. So why would a letter from the city be considered evidence?
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. I think that the state would not certainly be allowed to give testimony, but if it's referring to other information, such as we're filing the victim statement or the victim is indicating that she objects, I believe that, that the court can consider that. I believe that even appellant's counsel at page 4 of the transcript also indicated that the court should take into consideration DEN's criminal history, and it properly did so here. So ultimately, things that were relied on in the district court and weren't objected to at the time by counsel for DEN, we argue that those are appropriate for this court to consider as part of the record. Under the victim statement language, that's at 609A.03 subdivision 4, that may be in writing, and it's relevant as to several of the factors, including risk and the 10th factor of victim input. The court shall consider that victim statement, and it may be in writing. So there's no requirement in the expungement statute that the victim have to appear for this type of hearing.
But is that person even a victim if there was an acquittal? It seems to me it would be different as the district court referred to it as, wrongly, as a dismissal. There still could have been something, but for whatever reason, the case was dismissed. But that seems to be a different situation than when you have an acquittal and the person is found not guilty of the charges. If he's found not guilty of the charges, how can there be a victim?
Yes, Your Honor.
I know it's almost kind of a philosophical question.
Right, that's a very good point. I would argue even if there's an acquittal, the jury can come to whatever conclusion it decides to. She will have an opinion about whether she was a victim, and DEN will have an opinion about whether she's a victim. But under the law, there's no indication, we would argue there's no indication that she's not a victim. I believe this would be similar to the SMC case, which is 2017 Westlaw 641-8869, cited in our brief. There was a denial of a CSC petition, and the victim objected despite the fact that there was a dismissal, and the court properly considered her information as a victim.
Right, but that was a dismissal. This is an acquittal. Is there any case law saying, precedential or non-precedential, because I realize there's, you know, some significant non-precedential opinion, but opinions on these issues, but is there any case law indicating that when there's an acquittal, you can still have a victim?
And Your Honor, I'm not aware of anything under the victim rights statutes indicating that someone is not a victim just because there is an acquittal. I would argue it's similar to if there was a dismissal, since ultimately that's what the court here did, is dismiss the case after the acquittal. I would indicate as well that if you're thinking about her position, if the court expunges this, it's very difficult for her to get these records. The state possibly could get them if there's an ex parte request or a possible case. It would be hard to find them, but it would be a possibility. She can only get these records if she convinces a judge that this is substantially related to a court matter. I believe that's under 609A03 subdivision 7A6. Normally, these would all be public records, and she would have rights to these records as a victim. I believe under even the Data Practices Act at 1382 subdivision 5, it discusses who a victim is there and who gets the records, and there could be a victim even if a case was never charged, for example. That victim should still have a right to get those reports if they need them. So if the court finds that the district court should have granted this expungement, that does block her as well from getting the evidence, and she has an interest in this information as well.
But isn't that a different situation whether there's a if there weren't any charges brought, because there could be charges brought in the future. So it seems to make sense that you would want to have those records publicly available versus when you've gone through the entire process, including a jury trial and an acquittal.
Sure, Your Honor, and I could see the situation where charges are declined for some reason, or the statute of limitations ran out, but for some reason the victim still needs the records. But here, that door would be always closed to her if the court granted expungement. In fact, the court, I think, can properly see that there's been at least three victims for DEN. In the 1998 case, you have the initials of the victim in that Court of Appeals decision, SC. The 2014 case, that's in the state's Spiegel notice that was filed in this case.
But let me just stop you there. I mean, is it appropriate for us to consider that stuff? The district court wouldn't even allow that those priors into evidence at the trial in this case. So I'm just wondering how, it would be okay for us to consider those convictions for the purpose of whether the expungement was should have been granted or...
Sure, Your Honor. And I think that the factor of the trial court considering those issues for trial is a different determination because they're balancing the prejudice to the jury and whether those incidents are relevant or prejudicial. They consider the time delay that's gone on. We would argue here that when the defendant has at least 9 prior charges of assault, most of which were convictions, 9 prior, including the burglary criminal sexual conduct case, that this is a very different situation. We're not arguing that for domestic violence cases generally, that all domestic cases should be kept open and expungement should never be granted if there was an acquittal. It's a case-by-case decision. And I think you have a very unique harm to the public here, including the safety of the victims with whom DEN has been involved and the unique dynamics of domestic violence cases, but particularly here as applied to DEN, when you have prior charges for assault, for violations of order for protections, and I would argue the Court of Appeals unpublished decision for DEN is extremely significant, although it is very old, I grant you that. There's no...
That was 1999 case? Is that
the, yes, 1998 yes. was the offense date, and I believe the Court of Appeals decision was in 1999, but it does discuss some of the facts of that case in the opinion. And we also don't disagree that if the state does nothing, the court should immediately grant expungement. But here, the state did not do nothing. The state made argument, submitted a letter, referred to his criminal history, referred to other factors, provided the court with a very strong victim impact statement indicating specifics about DEN and why this should not be granted. She did not just discuss domestic violence cases generally. She says she's too afraid to testify at trial. She says she still feels he could hurt her now. She feels she could have lost her life that day. These are very important things, and if her input goes to several of the balancing factors, the court, as the court knows, there's 12 factors in the new balancing test that the legislature came up with. And we would argue that with respect to at least 7 of the factors, they all show that DEN is not has not shown that expungement is appropriate here.
Ms. Crabb, there's been some suggestion, I can't remember where, that she didn't testify at the trial. And so I'm just wondering if there's some sort of a fairness problem in considering, untested allegations made after an acquittal where someone didn't appear at the trial and have their day in court. Something about that is troubling to me, and I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Sure, Your Honor. I have thought about that issue, and Mr. DEN decided to waive his appearance at the expungement hearing, which is fine. That's his right. And I think similarly with her, she is not required to appear. She is not required to present oral testimony. Ultimately, at the trial, the state decided to go forward on the case without her testifying. I think it's clear from the record she didn't testify. The state can certainly do that depending on what the other evidence is. If there's an evidence-based prosecution and there's other sufficient evidence of a domestic assault, the state can decide to try to proceed with the case. Here, ultimately, the jury, I think, was troubled by the fact that probably she didn't testify. There was other evidence. But with respect to fairness, I guess I would also suggest we also have to consider fairness to DEN, but also fairness to the other people whose records would be possibly impacted by an expungement in this case. When you look at factor 2, we're talking about the risk to the public. That goes to not only FC, but his prior victims as well. That goes to other law enforcement officers who may have to come back to FC's address in the future. Factor three, length of time since this occurred. This is a relatively recent offense. Rehabilitation, I understand, cuts different ways depending if the court considers that's required.
Right. I mean, it seems to be if there is no crime, why should rehabilitation be required then?
Right. And I agree that if it was just this case, I'm not sure I would consider that relevant. But when you have all of the prior convictions, I think that he could establish rehabilitation, and that wasn't done here.
Right. But we're talking some significantly older cases, though.
Correct, Your Honor. We're discussing the most recent one was 2014. That was in the state's Spiegel notice. And most of the other cases are quite old. I would argue that the court can also look to the severity of those other cases. And the court is well aware of the other 12 factors here, so I'm not going to go through them now. I see my time is up. But we do respectfully request that the court correct the district court's language and affirm overall, however, that the denial was appropriate here. And balance the 12 factors for yourself. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I'd like to start by talking about the suggestion that the appropriate remedy in this case is to remand to reopen the record for additional information. The state made reference to the fact that there was a no-contact order referencing the petition that was not included. It's true, that was an error. It's important to note, though, that that no-contact order was a domestic abuse no-contact order that was issued in this case and was extinguished upon his acquittal. So that order doesn't contain any allegations from FAC. It doesn't contain any findings of domestic abuse. It just says that there is, in fact, an order prohibiting contact that was no longer in effect. So it's our position that even if that no contact order had been properly included, it contains no additional information upon which the court could have relied upon in making its decision. And the fact that there was a no contact order in effect at some point was referenced and relied upon by the district court. So reopening it to include that order would make no difference in terms of any factual findings. There are no additional facts to find with respect to that order. The truth is, no matter what this court determines is evidence in the record with respect to the expungement hearing, whether that's the petition, whether that's the City of Minnetonka's letter, whether that's the FAC letter, the district court considered all of those when making its determination. So whether it's all in, it's fair game, the district court considered that in making its determination and its fact findings. And whether it's narrowed, then those things should be excluded. But there's no additional evidence that was presented by the state that the district court did not consider. And so there's nothing to remedy. There's no other information that the court could have or should have considered that was presented. I would ask, there was a question related to whether or not the City of Minnetonka letter was evidence. That is not evidence. There are several unpublished cases referencing that specifically, including WGM, GRK, and CMB. There was also a question specifically about whether there was any authority published or unpublished about whether or not a crime occurred or there was a victim following an acquittal. There is such a case. That case is RMW, an unpublished case from Court of Appeals 2016. Specific quote, appellant engaged in no criminal behavior and there was no victim following an acquittal at a jury trial. So the presumption is that the allegations that led to DEN's criminal trial did not occur. It's not even a presumption, it just is. It simply did not occur. And for those reasons, FAC is not a victim and should not be treated as such for purposes of the expungement. The state made reference to what if these records are expunged, difficulties that FAC or law enforcement, other criminal justice agencies will face, and that the harms that they will suffer if these records are expunged. So FAC herself, by the statute, under subdivision 7, parent A, has the ability to have records unsealed, even if they are expunged. Additionally, throughout subdivision 7, A, there are numerous opportunities for criminal justice agencies to access these records if they need to for purposes such as investigation, for purposes such as background checks. In fact, with respect to the investigations, it doesn't even require a prior court order under certain circumstances. So the idea that the state criminal justice agencies or FAC will be unable to access these records if necessary is simply contravened by the statute itself. I would also note that the city, in their briefing reference and in their original objection letter, referenced potential harms that might be suffered. I would argue that those are extremely vague and speculative. And when we're looking at, for example, RHB 2012 published case by the Minnesota Supreme Court, in that case, there were three affidavits filed from Department of Human Services and from police and from Child Protection talking about how if certain criminal records were expunged, it would harm their ability to streamline investigations or show a history of maltreatment. So those are specific affidavits from specific individuals who might have a public safety interest. And in RHB, the Minnesota Supreme Court found that that was not sufficient, that those are extremely vague, extremely general. They would apply to any specific expungement. And that evidence was certainly more than was what was presented by the city of Minnetonka in their objection. And no other records holders presented any evidence or objected at all. Certainly they did not meet their clear and convincing burden, and neither did the city of Minnetonka. So for those reasons, we would ask that the... Oh, I would also note that the city made reference to the fact that DEN waived his appearance and that was somehow... deprived the state of their ability to meet their burden. DEN has no burden. He didn't have to appear at the hearing. He filed a proper waiver. It is ultimately the city of Minnetonka who had the obligation to present evidence and appear at the hearing if they wanted to meet their burden. Because they didn't, I would ask that this court reverse the district court. Thank you.
Counsel, one last question before you go. Sorry.
I was too ready. Go ahead.
Too quick an exit there. You'd mentioned reversal, but previously you said reversal and remand, and I just want to be clear. What specifically were you asking for in terms of remand?
We are not asking that this court remand for any further proceedings. We are just asking reversal and that expungement be granted, whether that's done at this court or remand to the district court directing them to enter an order for expungement.
And under what authority would we be able to reverse without remanding or reverse and remand for instructions to grant the expungement?
Well, Your Honor, it's our position that the district court, by with the evidence presented, did not properly follow the clear and convincing standard. They committed clear error. And so we would ask that the district court find, at least based on the evidence presented, that the state did not and could not have met their clear and convincing burden, at which point the district court would have to enter judgment for expungement because there is no alternative.
But under what authority would we be able to reverse and remand to direct the district court to enter that finding? Shouldn't we, if we were to agree with you, shouldn't we be reversing and remanding for further proceedings limited to the record that is in front of the district court and with applying appropriate standard, appropriate burden, and appropriate statute?
So the district court would have to ultimately enter the order for expungement, but it's our position that under the evidence presented and that the record should not be reopened, that there is no outcome in which the state could have met its clear and convincing burden with the evidence that was presented.
Can I ask one more question? So you did a motion to reconsider, right? I mean, the district court has had two opportunities to apply the correct law here, right?
Correct, and frankly, got it wrong both times. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your briefing. Both were very well done, and we really appreciate that. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. That is our last calendar item for a case on the calendar today for the oral arguments. We are now in recess for our non-oral calendar. Thank you both very much. Thank you all very much.